This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Welcome, everyone. This is another episode of Best of the Rest. I'm Jay Loving, and with me always, as always, is Dennis. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, hey, hey. How's it going?
Going well. How are you doing this evening?
We're doing good because I'm out of work, and we're going to talk some comic books.
Very good. Yes, we are. And joining us tonight is Ronnie Barron. For those of you who may not be familiar with him, I don't know how you wouldn't be familiar with him if you've listened to anything on Nerdy Legion, because he is on, let's see, what podcast are you on? Ultimate Everything. Marvel podcast, Absolute DC podcast, Open Bar, what is the podcast of a thousand?
Aftershock Central.
Aftershock Central podcast, and then podcast of a thousand.
Podcast of a thousand holds.
Faked choreographed holds or something like that. Sorry.
That's below the belt.
Editorial comment. So, and I think somehow Ronnie, I believe, negotiated his contract where he's required now to appear on it every podcast at least once. So we've had to have him on here. So.
Does he get 23 cents for every appearance?
I think so.
Okay.
No, nope. I just get one 23 cent check, but.
Dewan's still waiting for his 23 cent check, so.
Anyway, yeah, I will.
Gonna spend it all on glitter.
Catfish.
That's right.
And catfish.
Ooh, I saw something yesterday where there were scientists saying that glitter's like hazardous environment. They need to ban it.
Maybe if you inhale it, yeah, it would be hazardous, but.
It might be getting into the oceans and swallowed by the fish. So you have glittery fish.
Yeah, could be. But what we're here tonight to talk about is the comic book series that just ended, Motor Girl by Terry Moore, and published by Abstract Studio Press, which is it's Terry Moore's own imprint. That's all they publish is his work. So it's a series that's been getting a lot of talk, certainly amongst us on the Nerdy Legion Network group, and I follow Terry Moore and some other people on Twitter, and a lot of chatter out about this series and a lot of good things being said and a lot of great reviews. So we wanted to talk about that tonight, kind of give our thoughts, bring up questions that we've had for each other, and just kind of discuss the book in general.
Yeah, only 10 issues. That's kind of an odd numbering for a series, isn't it?
It's certainly I guess it's the shortest thing he's ever done that I'm aware of, because Echo, Rachel Rising, and certainly Strangers in Paradise went on for many issues. I don't know of another series that he's written that's been this short.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
Is there anything beyond these four? I mean, Strangers in Paradise, Echo, Rachel Rising, Motor Girl.
Those are the four main
for his
imprint.
Yeah, for his indie stuff, that's about it.
Yeah.
What else has he written outside of his indie stuff?
He did a couple of issues of a Batman series. I don't remember which one. It wasn't like Batman proper. And then he did a couple of issues of The Runaways, or Runaways.
So like a guest appearance for an arc or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And honestly, I don't know if it was like his art or his pencils or if it was the writing.
So even though I consider him well known, and I've known his work for a long time, especially since, I guess, Strangers in Paradise in the 80s. He's not been that prolific with the amount of work out there, but the work he puts out is so good.
Yes. So
and maybe good. And maybe that's why it's so good.
Yeah, because it's not quantity, it's quality.
Exactly. I think I remember seeing him do a cover of Poison Elves once, too.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just looking finally up here. It's 2008, Moore wrote and drew covers for all five issues of Marvel Comics' Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, Volume 2. The following year, he began writing Runaways, Volume 2 for Marvel. That was a 9-issue run.
Oh, yeah, so he did 9 issues.
Yeah, he did Volume 2, right? That's what you said, Jay.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That was after BK Vaughn got off of it. And then they relaunched it, restarted it or whatever, and he did.
So,
which I think is collected in Runaways Hardcover Volume 2, I think.
Interesting. And, you know, and he started Strangers in Paradise. Well, 2018 will be the 25th anniversary of the first issue of that. And so he'll be... In fact, the new Strangers in Paradise that he's writing is going to be called Strangers in Paradise 25, simply because of commemoration of that 25th year. So... But that's, you know, I mean, his most notable works are his independent stuff, the four that we've talked about. And Motor Girl was a book he wanted to write. He talks about that he wanted to originally write that after Strangers in Paradise, but that for some reason he felt he needed to do Echo, that needed to be done next, and then Rachel Rising came up. So this kind of has been something that's been brewing for him for a number of years.
Yeah, which I talked to him at the C3E2 last year, but I didn't. It was like one of those starstruck moments.
Yeah.
Where like,
did you got tongue tied?
With Jason Aaron or Matt Kent or whatever, you know, I can just, it's like talking to the wall for me. You know, I didn't get starstruck or anything, and then he put Terry Moore in front of me, and then I'm like a 9-year-old, you know, in front of a police officer or whatever, and I'm just like I love your stuff.
I don't know why you'd be intimidated. He's only won 1 Eisner Award and 2 Harvey Awards, so it's nothing.
Yeah, and he's a great guy and a great personality and everything. It was just, I don't know. Yeah, because we walked away from there, and DeJuan was like, dude, I've never seen you, like, not be able to have a conversation with anybody.
Well, if he's at C2E2 this next year, and I get it, and I'm planning on being there, I think I can talk to him.
I think I remember, didn't somebody say they were at his booth, and there weren't many people at his booth, they were at all the other artist booths or something?
Yeah, every time, like Nick and I or DeJuan and I walked by, there was like maybe one person looking at his original art, or maybe somebody buying a Rachel Rising shirt or whatever, but there wasn't like gobs of people like we assumed there would be.
That's surprising to me.
Yeah.
I'd be all over his original art if it was affordable.
It was decently priced.
I know some people don't appreciate his simple style, but I just love it.
Yeah. It's like simply elegant.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if that's simple as a word, but yeah, it's not as intricate as a lot of artists.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can barely draw a stick figure, so when I say simple, that's not, like, downplaying what he's doing.
No,
you know,
I'm not that.
Well, it's minimal lines, minimal shading, and it conveys everything he wants to in his art.
Yeah.
Right. And it's all...
No matter what it is, whether it's a look on a character's face or, you know, inanimate object, whatever.
I think that's what he does so great is expressions. You can tell us, he can tell a story just with his art and his expressions.
Right. And that's really, it really speaks to his talent, because another thing is that all he does, everything he does is black and white, monochrome. And, you know, color can be used to evoke emotions in a lot of ways. And without color, then you have to do it all with narrative and expressions and posture, whatever the characters are doing. So, you know, I think it adds a little bit of a, makes it harder to try to convey certain emotions in just monochrome comics.
Yeah, and if it was in color, it might, because I've seen some regular pencils that looked fantastic, and then I've seen some of, you know, the same thing when it's finished and inked by somebody else, and it looks totally different and right, not so fantastic. So I think, yeah, I'm on board with what you guys are saying, because I don't know if these series, especially Motor Girl, was or is colored at some point. I don't know if you would get the same emotion and everything that you would now in black and white.
I don't think you would, or at least I don't think I would. Because, I mean, you see a little bit of it with the colors. You know, the colors are colored, and you can see a lot of times he'll put the black, just the pencils in there as well. And I don't know, I don't see that the color would add anything to it.
Yeah.
Because you have to have it on covers, because people just don't pick up a black and white cover comic for some reason. So anyway, the protagonist of this story is a young woman named Samantha, or everybody just calls her Sam, who is a former Marine who did 3 tours of duty in Iraq, spent 10 months in an Iraqi prison under torture, and is now living in the desert of Nevada working at a junkyard for this elderly woman named Libby, who is actually a character from Strangers in Paradise. There's a little bit of a crossover here. Libby appears in Strangers in Paradise as the aunt of one of the protagonists of that book.
Yeah, and you don't really learn that backstory immediately. It's kind of given to you in flashbacks as you progress through the book.
Correct. Yeah, we meet... Go ahead, Ryan.
Sorry. Isn't that something that he also does? Is like there's a character in Echo that was in Strangers in Paradise also, and then a character, or not like an Easter egg type thing in Rachel Rising that was also in one of the two, to make it like subcontinuity, but just more like Easter eggs that of people that have read his stuff before.
Yeah, he does that. At least I think in one time in every one of his works, between those four.
At least like one or two issues. I'm not saying like, you know, periodically throughout the whole series or whatever, but
yeah, and it's not so that you don't need to know the story of this, say, of Libby to get into this book. You know, it's kind of a nice one of those, like you said, Easter egg, nice things for the fans to look at. To see, oh, hey, yeah, I know this character.
Yeah, I haven't read Strangers in Paradise, so I didn't catch any of those. I mean, I kind of known from the years of seeing the covers and reading stuff about it, like the two main characters, Francine and Kuchu, I think.
Yeah.
So I didn't catch those, so I can't confirm nor deny characters.
But, so we have Sam who's working at this junkyard, and then we're almost immediately introduced to the second main character, which is a gorilla named Mike.
Yeah, and I guess that was one of the keys to this book is, like, you've seen Terry Moore's other works, and you know, they're kind of reality based, right? Set in a real world, you know, it's all plausible, you know. But this book leads off with the first cover and the first story with Sam and Mike, the talking gorilla. So that's a little bit off of what he's usually done.
And from here on out, we'll call the gorilla Sparky.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
But
just because his name's Mike is all.
Yeah, and that's, of course, the first question you answer that you got to think about when you see this is, okay, is this imaginative or is this, you know, just a fantastic literature? Is this gorilla, quote-unquote, really here or not? And pretty quickly, because Libby shows up, drives up here on in a few pages, and she doesn't see Mike. So he's sitting in the... From Sam's perspective, Mike's sitting in this big lounger. Libby doesn't see him, so you're thinking, okay, he's not really there. Or is he? And she's just not seeing him. So you really have a lot of questions. It's about how the reality, or what is reality in this comic book. But Libby comes up to ask Sam that she's been offered to sell the junkyard, the property that the junkyard is on. And she wants to know Sam's opinion of that, because she knows that Sam is kind of, you know, she's aware a little bit of her background, not all the real details. She knows she's a veteran, she knows she spent time in a prison camp, and she's very protective of Sam, and this is kind of giving her a place to live, to try to sort things out, come to grips with, you know, what's happened to her, and maybe kind of heal and recover. So she doesn't want to just sell this out from under Sam. And Sam's really reluctant. She, you know, she doesn't want Libby to sell because she doesn't want to leave, because this is a place that's become kind of a sanctuary to her, but also kind of a place to hide from the larger world. You know, she's out there by herself, mostly with just her and her thoughts. You know, and of course Mike has given her advice about, you know, well, maybe it is time to sell this. You've been wanting to get out of here, been talking about getting out of here. So we've got that, you know, little plot development. But then we get yet another fantastical plot element coming in when that night Sam's awakened by a bright light and some sounds, and it is a alien spacecraft that has landed out in the junkyard.
Yeah, so you're just kind of left wondering what's kind of going on. You got talking gorillas, imaginary or not, aliens, flying saucers. You're in the Arizona desert, so it all kind of fits. Is it Arizona?
Nevada, I think.
Nevada, okay, yeah, you're in the Nevada desert, so it's all coming together, little bits and pieces, but you're kind of wondering where this book's going, and it does kind of stray off from the usual Terry Moore stuff, with his usual stuff being three other things.
And the other thing, too, is that these aliens are very, the way he renders them and draws them, very cartoonish. I remember Paul and I had talked about this book early on, and you know, these aliens are drawn, they look like something from the Jetsons, or did you ever see that Flintstones, that character, alien character on there, the Mighty Kazoo or something like that? So they're very, very cartoonish, funny looking characters. So which further compounds the confusion. It's like, okay, what's going on here? How much reality is this? And since we know that Sam sees Mike, but nobody else sees her, then you're wondering, okay, who's seeing these aliens, if anybody else.
Yeah, so I guess that's the whole story set up from the first issue, and so the whole story also issue 10 is figuring out the aliens, what's going on with Sam and Mike, the interactions there, are they real or not. I know, I kind of thought it was kind of real because I think she has some interactions with her in the second issue, and then there's some remnants to Dex Day, or is there? Which is kind of funny because that's your typical Terry Moore humor on how the she thinks it's a dream but then sees the evidence of them.
Right. Well, then it also it gets even more complicated when a couple of days later these two guys in suits that you know are obviously heavies for somebody, you know, come up and wanting or trying to convince Libby to sell, and they give her a big check and just like sign this, take the check and walk away, almost in a threatening manner. So somebody is wanting this property, and we see towards the end of this is in the second issue, these two goons that for hire, which are comedic characters in themselves because they're pretty incompetent. They don't really know what they're doing. So they go back to talk to the guy that hired them, who is in some sort of a research facility with this, you know, advanced looking technology that he, and they make reference to these alien spacecraft, the UFOs. So they know about them or something, or have become aware about them. And we find out that that's what they're wanting to buy this property for, is to do whatever they're wanting to do, which is not just research. It's something much more nefarious going on.
Yeah, so, I mean, that just further brings the story on. And actually, I guess the UFO didn't really land in the junkyard. It kind of crashed, and she had to kind of repair it.
Right.
You know, hence Motor Girl. She's like repairing vehicles in the junkyard, and hey, you know, the UFO's another vehicle, so let's just dive in and see what we can do to fix it.
Yep.
And it's kind of amazing what their language is. Did you pick up on their language pretty quick?
Yeah, the bick and the beeps and the whole monosyllabic, you know, one syllable utterances they were. But
they're all bees.
Yep. So anyway,
yeah, so it didn't crash. It fell with style.
Any landing you can walk away from is a good landing.
That's right.
So then, you know, the most of the rest of this from like issue 3 through 9 is just this growing conflict where this guy named I've forgotten his name now, who's trying to, you know, force Libby into selling this, trying to get possession of this land, and these goons attempt to kidnap Sam in a very comedic scene where, you know, you got two incompetent guys trying to train a veteran Marine with 3 tours of duty in Iraq. So that you can tell that didn't go well.
But it's like the two bad guys in Home Alone, right?
Yeah.
Mixed with like Benny Hill style.
Yeah, it's very slapstick in places. And
yeah.
Because they're, like I said, they're just total. We find out, too, that this is the first real job they've had is these work-for-hire heavies. So, right. You know, they're no good at it.
And they're learning on the job.
Yeah. It's trial and error to them.
And one of the guys actually gets kidnapped by the aliens, and we see some interesting scenes.
Your stereotypical alien kidnapping abduction scenarios?
Yep.
Well, it's
with
pretty weird.
With anal probing and everything?
Yes. I mean, we start seeing these creatures that are sort of hybrid human and animals that he sees while he's on.
Mm-hmm. So
now, did you say 2 through or 3 through 9? Is that what you said?
That's kind of starting at the end of towards the middle of the end of 2 through issue 9. That's where I think a lot of the that seems to be developing mostly. You know, this conflict between Sam and these people are trying to get possession of the land. I mean, that's just roughly.
Yeah, it's setting up the story, I think.
Yeah, right. And see, and like, I'm not going to go into it. You guys can go into it. But like, for me, starting out, like with issue one up until issue six, I'll say, I think it was seven. It was Terry Moore, and I was reading it, and I was highly enjoying it, right? But then what happens in issue seven or issue eight is what got the gut punch for me, that was like, this is heavier than what's on the surface here, if that makes sense.
No, you're right.
So for me, then it went from I'm reading Terry Moore and highly enjoying it to, holy hell, this might be the best book that I've read all year because of that one turn and that one issue, I guess.
No, you're right, because we start...
It's kind of a little lighter at the beginning. You know, it's kind of funny. You got these aliens, you got the guy in the strong arms, but it's kind of comedic how they're trying to get her off the land, and she keeps... They inadvertently keep stepping over their feet, or...
Right.
You know, she's a trained marine, and she just kind of easily takes them down, and it's just kind of humorous.
Right, and then you got Mike on the toilet, and they're talking, or she's on the toilet, and they're talking about, you know, running out of beer or whatever. Like the lighter side of it.
Right.
Oh yeah, it's all light, and then it takes that turn. You start getting. The real details into her past.
Yeah, I was going to say, that starts in about the second half of issue six, because the first of it is that same kind of comedic thing. You've got Larry, the guy who was abducted, he's put back on Earth, but he's scared, and he runs into Sam's house and hides inside the lounger under the cushions. How he gets inside of it, I don't know.
Well, you see, and that's where I was going to ask. It's like, you know, I think Terry Moore does a lot of his... You know, his stuff could be reality-based. But this book, you know, that part is like, I was kind of like, do I start taking it seriously? Because that, I think the alien changed into that scratchy, like, devil-y-looking thing. And then he's in the seat cushions, and you've got the aliens themselves. Now, I've kind of determined at this point that, you know, Mike's real to Sam, but not to everybody else. But at this point, I don't know what else is real and what isn't real. And even going through all 10 issues, I'm still not sure if the aliens are real or not.
Right.
Through the whole series?
Yeah.
Are
they?
I don't know, because I think... Well, this is my interpretation, because we haven't even made it to the end or... Anything else? So you want me to jump ahead, or you want me to...
Okay. Well, let's wait till we get to the end.
Okay.
Let's wait till we get to the end. But that's where my big question is. I it's 10 issues to get to the end, and I still don't know what's real and what's not real. I'm still digesting that. I just read it. I read issue 10 yesterday, so I'm still less than 24 hours with it.
But Ronnie's absolutely right. Yeah, starting in 6, that's where we start seeing the flashbacks to her in Iraq. There's that one scene where she tries to rescue that boy out of the building.
Uh-huh.
Under fire, and that's punch.
And he has the stuffed monkey.
Yeah, the stuffed gorilla that he gives to her. Gorilla,
I guess. Yeah.
And she thinks, okay, I'll keep him safe. And you know, it doesn't end well for the kid. So yeah, starting there, we really start getting some emotional
gut punches,
and you know, we're seeing more or learning more about Sam's condition, that she's got something, tumor, hematoma, something in her head that is not going to end well if she doesn't do something about it.
And right. Which at this point, we think that we're in present time, though.
Right.
Where she's at the junkyard, and that kind of writes off, which brings me back to Dennis's point of, she's seeing Mike, and she's the only one that can see Mike. And she's seeing the aliens, and she's the only one that can see aliens.
No, is she?
I'll clarify that later once we get there.
Okay.
And then the two henchmen and the guy, and then the main bad guy or evil business guy. unless I interpreted issue 10 wrong, which we'll get there, but yeah. So go ahead, Jay.
So yeah, I mean, so but we continue on, and then they these people, they're trying to get position at land. They somehow, he's got ends with the government and the law enforcement agency, so he finally gets permission, gets some sort of a permit, and they bring all their equipment. They set up outside the junkyard, so they're kind of surrounding the junkyard, waiting for these aliens, and they've got some sort of mechanism that Sam thinks is some sort of a explosive device, but it's something that's supposed to be able to bring down flying aircraft, cause them to crash. So they're out there just waiting for the aliens to come back, and you know, the story just is escalating more and more towards some kind of conflict between, you know, Sam, Libby, and these people.
Yeah, so, and you just keep, and it seems like the book starts to get more into the flashbacks at this point. So you go like issue 6, issue 7, issue 8, and you're just getting more. So, like you alluded to, Sam, she was in Iraq, went to save a kid. I think there was a suicide bomber in there, or a bomb. So it went off when she was right on the edge of it, so it injured her. So they put her in a Humvee ambulance. They're trying to get her out of there. In the next issue, I think they're showing that part. And it gets hit by an IED.
Right.
And it's like, and I guess that's what got me there, was because when they had her loaded on the Humvee, she was like strapped down, neck brace. She looked in really bad shape. But then once the Humvee got blown up, it looked like she was the only one that crawled out of it. And was it at that point she got captured?
Yes, that's where she ends up in a prison camp.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been blown up twice. Now she then goes to a prison camp, and now you can relate the scars on her back that you've seen in previous issues. I think that's going on in issue 8 and 9, where you're kind of seeing that. And then all the while, it's just coming to a head about the aliens, the guy wanting the property and wanting to be on there. Libby's fighting them. The guy's just going to be on there. He's going to do what he does, calls it government action, and it's just all coming. And I think they finally captured one of the little aliens by like issue 8.
Yeah, the one that Sam calls Bick, because that's what he says, Bick. So she calls him that. She's thinking that's his name. Yeah, they capture him. And Walden is the main guy, the head of the evil organization.
Ooh, like Walden books.
Yeah.
Or Thoreau's Walden. But then the two, you know, the two thugs, they have a change of heart. They realize that, hey, this is not cool. You know, this is a being that we're. So they try to rescue Bick, which fails. But it turns out he could have gotten out of there himself. In fact, he does. He gets out of there by himself. But they messed that up, and get caught. And the end of issue 9, we see the last thing in issue 9 is this armada of flying saucers that are coming up over the horizon. So that, you know, you can tell it's going to lead to a big event in the 10th issue.
Which by that point we know is going to be the last issue. So I think by about issue, 6 or 7, we knew 10 was going to be the final issue.
Yeah.
So that inaugural issue, we'll say, like the last half of 6, we got emotional gut punches from what we're reading, and then even more knowing that we're only going to have 4 more issues left.
Yeah, I know. It was like gut punch equal issue 6, gut punch issue 7, gut punch issue 8. 9, he kind of gave you a little reprieve, and then he just really just double gut punches you in 10.
Yep, karate chopped me in the throat. I'm not crying, you're crying, right?
So, yeah.
So we get to the last issue, and then this fleet of flying saucers come in, and Walden immediately, you know, orders them to fire this contraption or whatever they've got.
The NP4.
The NP4, whatever it's called. Which, you know, is sending out these beams, and this thing ends very quickly. This battle doesn't last long.
Well, that's because he did some obscene gestures towards the invading alien fleet.
Yeah, he starts, you know, shouting and making gestures, and essentially this one craft crashes in and takes him out, pretty much.
Yeah, it was like a kamikaze suicide mission.
Right. And then that's it. They're gone. Bick says goodbye, runs up and hugs Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we go back. You know, we get the flashbacks again back to Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's talking to this other soldier, and she's like, where are we? What's going on? He goes, we're in Bick, Iran. And I looked that up, and BIC is it's an acronym. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the name of this place. But it is a port in Iran. Iran, Iraq, near the Iran-Iraq border. And that's the acronym for it, BIC, B-I-K. So that's like, holy cow. You know, now you're realizing that this is really getting, you know, intricate stuff into her head.
Right.
And then we have her last scene with Mike. And that's a really emotional scene.
Yeah.
Because
which this is actually her final scene, but there was issue 7 or 8, I think, where she got mad at Mike, or when she went to the doctor, when Libby talked her into going to the doctor or whatever,
right.
Then Mike didn't come around for a while.
Yes.
Right. And even like when she called out and needed him, for whatever, or she just assumed that. Well, we as the reader, I guess, assumed that he was mad at her or she was mad at him, when essentially, they quote unquote fixed her at the doctor.
Right. And Libby has been trying to get her to go to the doctor and have this procedure, and she's refused. She just refuses.
Right.
And so we have this scene with Mike that, in reading it, you understand that, okay, at least this is the way I interpret it, you finally get the understanding that, yes, Mike is totally a figure of her imagination.
Yeah.
And that whatever they're going to do, repairing this, taking the shrapnel out of her head, doing whatever they're going to, is going to make him go away. Because once she's healed, once she's fixed, Mike is no longer going to, and she doesn't want to say goodbye to him.
Right.
Because that's her one tie back to that boy, little boy who gave her that stuffed gorilla.
Right.
And
that one, and Mike's last line is pretty heavy. Right?
Yeah.
That's where he says, I don't have mine in front of me, but
I got it here.
Go ahead.
Pull it up here.
Oh.
Sorry.
Something to the effect of, you weren't supposed to protect me, maybe I was supposed to protect you.
Yeah.
He wasn't asking you to save me, Sam. He wanted me to save you, but this is as far as I can go. The rest is up to you.
Right, yeah.
And then it sort of morphs into this, her into the hospital after her surgery.
Right.
She's all, like, healed up and saying her goodbyes and kind of moving on.
Yeah. But we kind of glossed over one thing, though. And this is the part. Like, it comes full circle. This 1 through 10 comes full circle from the first half of issue 1 to the last half of issue 10.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the last thing in reality that happens is her fainting in issue 1.
Yes.
And then Libby tells her that everything beyond that point was all in her head. Because the last thing that she knew was that she was there trying to get her to go get the procedure done, blah, 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 blah. And then that's why Sam thinks that she knows everything that happened, but...
Yeah, it's on this panel, the next to the last page, where, you know, Sam is thanking Libby. Says, if it wasn't for you, I'd be dead. And Libby says, well, I knew something wasn't right when I came to tell you I had an offer on this place. You were slurring your words and talking to the chair. I thought you were having a stroke and fell to the floor. And she called the ambulance. And Sam says, boy, that's not how I remembered it all. So, yes, right. From that point where Libby fainted up till now, every bit of that was all inside of Sam's imagination. The whole series.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't make that connection because did this come out monthly on time or did it actually take 10 months?
Yeah.
And so I haven't read issue one for
this month. So, yes,
so
unlike
I didn't connect that panel.
Yeah, unlike Black Mask or whatever, this book came out on time.
Well, Terry Moore does do that.
but yeah, so this whole elegant, romantic ride, crazy fun ride that we've been on for 10 issues. And I've seen very little criticism about how it was like a cop-out ending, kind of like New Heart type TV show, you know, where it was all a dream. But like here, it all actually makes sense because everything that she saw, like Jay alluded to, like the Bic for the alien was actually her station in Afghanistan, or Mike was actually the stuffed gorilla. The two strongmen, thugs, and then Walden was actually the last coherent thing that she remembered, I assume, that Libby told her before the ambulance got there, or the last coherent thing that before she passed out or had a stroke or whatever.
Now, she had been seeing Mike for a while, though, not just when that happened.
Yeah, because I assume, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but after her hospital visit in Afghanistan, then she got sent home, and then that's where she'd been hiding.
Right.
Like issue one alluded to, and her sanctum sanctorum basically was there, and she didn't want to have the procedure because she saw Mike, you know, and her PTSD, we'll say.
No, I guess Mike was her way of coping with it.
Right.
And that's why I think, no, this is not a cop-out at all, making this all, it's brilliant. It's damn brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Because this is how she was processing and coping with everything. And I don't know much at all about PTSD, but I do know that it can cause people to have flashbacks, alternate memories, you know, hallucinations. Think, you know, all of this fits in with, you know,
with her experience.
With her experience, and so
yeah.
You know, no, it's not a cop out at all. In fact, it's just damn clever. It's damn clever how he did this.
So here's my question to both of you. I have my answer, but I'll ask you guys.
Okay.
Is this book like Echo, or I guess more like Stranger Things, and even like Essex County? Is it a slice of life style book?
Well, the thing about slice of life is you can usually relate to some aspect of it, and I don't know if I can really relate to any of her aspects, if that makes any sense.
To the PTSD?
I mean, is that how they experience it? Because you hear all this stuff where they'll hear something and it'll trigger it.
Right, yeah.
And,
well, I'm just asking. There is no right or wrong answer, I don't think.
It could be a slice of life, but it's a slice of a traumatic life.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the whole thing of just, it's labels, you know, and how do you want to label something?
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, this is...
it's a damn fine storytelling.
As you're reading this book, you think it's a fantasy book, because you think, okay, imaginary gorillas, aliens that look like, you know, dogs walking on their hind legs, and all this. It's you think, okay, this is a very, it's fantastical, and then you see this is very much reality. It was just the reality that she created in her head. So yeah, you could call it a slice of life in that way if you want to.
Yeah, but if you're creating something in your head, are you seeing other points of view, other perspectives? Like when we would switch and see what was going on when the one guy got kidnapped and with the aliens is.
Well, that's her stereotypically, like you said, it's the stereotypical alien analogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if she's up to that point in her mind, and saw him get kidnapped, then you know, that's the stereotypical thing that she's going to think of is, oh, they're going to probe him when they get him up there.
Or they're going to experiment on him. Or is that right. her? Or is that her masking the torture she saw in the prison?
Yeah, that could be it too. Or the torture that she witnessed herself in the prison.
You know, I don't. From what I read and the way I've interpreted that panel on that next to last page, that was all. I mean, she was slurring her words. She passed out. Libby called the ambulance. And this whole narrative took place inside of Sam's imagination between the point when she fainted and she got the surgery.
Right.
So it all just sort of... So in that sense, if that's true, then no, nothing what she saw was actual reality in her from... She wasn't seeing anything from another perspective because it was all...
Well, but what I'm getting from that is I kind of started getting that impression, like when you started switching between the alien fleet and the helicopters that came to break her out of prison, you start seeing where he's matching up the helicopters in one panel with the spaceship. So everything she's seeing is a different representation of a flashback she's having to Iraq.
Right.
So if she's seeing somebody sitting there looking worried about and seeing what's happened to these other people, then is that her seeing somebody else in the prison and they're both watching what's happened to other prisoners?
I can see it that way too. But also, like to your point, like when the two guys go to break him out of the tent, right? She was nowhere near there, but we saw that point of view.
Yeah, and so... She saw that point of view, basically. If we or saw
she
it,
just, she just assumed that point of view. Right? Like, I've dreamed before where I wasn't anywhere around there.
I but wasn't, you can still like, see it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, out of body experiences isn't the right word for it, I guess, because I wasn't even, like, in the room. But, like, say... My wife and daughter was at Walmart doing this and they double paid for whatever, you know what I mean? In my dream. Why would I dream that? I don't know, but I'm just using an example, but I wasn't there, but I still saw it like I was watching it on TV. But to your point though, with her, the two guys breaking Vic out of the tent, is like her getting rescued from the prison.
Yeah.
That's how I interpreted that as well.
Oh, I thought the rescue from prison is when the aliens had kind of blown up the Walden and the NP4 and all that stuff. And then you get the flashback of where it's Black Hawk helicopters, UFOs, Black Hawk helicopters.
Yeah. But it also, yeah, I can see that, yeah.
And then that's what made me think, everything you've seen then with the aliens is some kind of recollection of something she encountered between getting captured and getting rescued. Because, you know, that's the stereotypical. You get captured by aliens and they do things to you. So she was captured in Iraq and they were doing things.
Right.
And that's the coping mechanism.
Right. Well, and like we talked about earlier, and Jay pointed it out, I think it was Jay. It might have been you, Dennis, but like where he's hiding in the cushion, and you said it, Dennis, when he was hiding in the cushion and then we see the cute little alien go into the, like, the demon alien or demon demonic figure. That, I mean, that's kind of like their interrogator coming in.
Yeah, there's something with that little scene that he intended. Had to be, with the way that alien changed.
Right.
It's some kind of mental projection by her. So deep stuff. I'm tempted now to just, I want to go back and just read the whole thing through.
Yep. And I am famous for rereading issues that I really like.
Yeah. Well, I do too.
I read 10 three times so far. But I could only take it like three times. You know what I mean?
Right, I read it twice just to make sure I could get the, you know, was interpreting. But yeah, it's this is definitely a series you could read probably several times and get nuances out of it every time you read it.
Yeah, I agree with that as well.
And I guess the nice thing about 10 issues is they can put it in one trade.
That's coming out. It's actually...
Be two trades.
Is it going to be two trades?
Yeah.
The first trade's already out. The first five issues, yeah.
But there's also in April, hopefully, like March, I think the second trade comes out, if I'm not mistaken.
I have no doubt that he will
put February out. February or March. But yeah. Hopefully, he's at C2E2 in March, and the hardcover comes out.
I was going to say, there'll be a deluxe, I'm almost certain.
Yeah.
With all 10 issues in it.
Yeah.
And I will get that. I don't usually buy...
Yeah, because in my album at C2E, I didn't even buy anything. I stared at him and told him that I freaking walked away. And Dewan and I like kicked myself the whole night, and then I went back because Motor Girl's the only thing that I don't have in trade or deluxe edition. Everything else, well, besides Strangers in Paradise,
right? Right.
So I have Echo, and I have Rachel Rising, and I was gonna get the trade for Motor Girl, and Dewan and I went back to him the next day, and guess what was sold out?
Yep.
And so then I had Aaron get it for me at New York Comic Con when he went.
Oh, and that was probably anathema to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said he was going to go up and say something rude to Terry Moore, which he didn't. It's and funny actually, to contemplate.
A little secret is Aaron's thinking about reading Motor Girl anyway. Because we've all ranted and raved on how good it was.
Oh, can he get past the art?
I don't see, there's not anything to get past, in my opinion.
I know, there's not. There's not anything to get past.
Yeah, there's not.
It's great storytelling. It's great art. It's just goodness all around. And the thing is, he puts a sketch at the end of the book that I think is almost the best art in the book.
Yeah.
The one with her holding...
Well, there's that, and then look there on the page preceding that, opposite it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you got Mike there going, celebrate.
Yeah.
And then you got the sketches, and there's one of those at the end of the book, and it's just, you know, it's just goodness.
Yeah.
It's just even the ads are, he's got his own ads in there for his own book, so it's like, then you get the, yeah, coming in December, the final trade paperback, and then the next ad's the 25th anniversary sketchbook for SIPs, and then the ad on the back is for Strangers in Paradise Omnibus, and... It's like, even his ads is his art.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
The only thing that's not his is the very last page. There's an ad for albatrossfunnybooks.com, some Albatross books.
Right.
But the cover, the back ad, everything in that book is his.
Yep.
Ads and everything. And you know what's great is, like, when I was getting Rachel Rising, I think my LCS missed issue, I don't know, 3 or 4, right? And I don't think I ever, and then I didn't really notice it, I guess, until I got to like issue into the teens or the early 20s, and I realized, hey, wait a second, I'm missing an issue. You can go to his website and buy the individual issues if they're not sold out. And so I think issues 1 and 2 were sold out, but 3 was there, so I ordered it from his website. And, you know, that's all I ordered. And he threw in a reprint of issue 1 from the – I think they gave it out that year for Halloween, the Halloween comics giveaway. He just threw it in there.
Nice. Very nice.
I could share it and all that. So, yeah, and I think occasionally also – I mean, he's got his website where you can get his books and his the trades and everything. But also on occasion, he puts up his original art on his website for sale.
Yes.
And actually, I guess since we're talking about that, we ought to figure out what his website is. Forgot. It's probably like terrymoore.com.
I know the albatross. I'm trying to think.
Oh. Yep, terrymoore.com. No, that's the actress. Whoops, wrong Terry Moore. Oh, I'm sorry. It's abstractstudiocomics.com.
That's because I think it's under his imprint.
Did we lose Ronnie? No, he's there. I think.
I don't know that he's there. Anyway.
I'm here.
Okay.
There he is.
I'm here. My thumb hit my mute button. So.
Oh, there you go. Ooh, and he's he's offering on his website that you get the Strangers in Paradise 25th anniversary subscription offer, so you can subscribe to it. And if you subscribe to it, you get a very limited blank sketch cover version of issue 1. And it's only going to go to subscribers. And retailers can get one for every 10 covers.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he won't be selling it at conventions.
But will he do a sketch cover at commissions? I'm assuming that he will.
Well, I'm saying if you get the sketch cover by subscribing or from your retailer, and then you take it to a convention, he might sketch on it.
All right, definitely gonna have to look into that possibility, because that would be great to get a sketch cover from him at C2E2.
Yeah, if only there was a Motor Girl sketch cover.
That would be nice, but I'll take anything I can get from him.
Well, wait a second. Don't you just live near him?
Not near him. He's in Houston. That's 4 hours away.
It's in the same state.
It's in the same state, yes. But it's not.
But that state is Texas?
The state is Texas, yeah. I was going to say, he's living near him. Oh, yeah.
Well, come on. I can drive from one edge of my state to the other in like 4 hours.
Yes.
Depends on you go.
That's if you do the speed limit on I-70.
Yes. It can be done faster if you really want to.
Yeah. If you go the length way, the longest drive east to west in Texas, that's going to take you about 16 hours to drive. And pretty much the same north to south. So, yeah, it's a sizable place. So.
Yeah, so I've heard.
But no, I mean... they do one con here in Dallas. It's not a very good con. I haven't been in years. I'm gonna check to see if he's there next year. I'm gonna go just to see him. But I don't even know if he goes to that con. It's not really, like I said,
It's a local con. You gotta drive 7 hours to.
No, it's actually it's about 20 minutes away, or the convention center where they have this is about 20-25 minute drive for me. But it's not. I've never had much that interests me there.
Well, if it has Terry Moore, that has your interest.
Well, it does. I'm going to check to see if he's going to be there next year.
So, yeah, so I guess his next thing is re-going back to Strangers in Paradise, and I wonder if he's got anything planned after that.
He's not said that I've heard, but I'm sure he does. I can't imagine he didn't have something... in the works. I mean, look how many years he let Motor Girl percolate. He was wanting to do this years ago before.
Well, is that why it's such a good story? He's had years to kind of think of the details and get it layered just enough and everything.
I think it's good because he's just a stinking genius is what he is.
See, yeah, I appreciate good writing. I can't write, so I can appreciate it and just wonder, how do they come up with this? And he's come up with stuff from Rachel Rising and Echo and this. And, you know, the only reason that Strangers in Paradise intimidates me is because it's like, what, 100-plus issues? Is it that many?
It's quite a few. I don't know exactly the number.
I thought it was more than that.
Probably is, but it's over. It's like the omnibus is 2,000 pages. That's two volumes, and it's like over 1,000 pages each. So yeah, it's.
Oh, I'm on his website, and he has sketch cover. He's got sketches on his website for sale, and he's got original art still for sale on his cover. Oh, he's got Motor Girl art.
I mean, the least expensive things I've seen of his are $400.
Yeah, I'm looking. This guy's interiors, and each one of his interior pages are $425. $425. Yeah. $425.
I'm assuming the covers are more. The cover art is more, I'm assuming.
Well, I don't see any cover art, so that must have all sold.
Yeah, probably. That would make sense.
You can get you a Motor Girl or a Strangers in Paradise t-shirt.
Cool.
Ooh, maybe you can get a sketch t-shirt. He can sketch the t-shirt. He just never wash it.
Okay. Yeah. That would be pretty ripe after a few wearings, but or you could frame it. Like people do with sports jerseys, you know.
you only break it out for special occasions.
That's
true. And those occasions are sweaty.
Yes. Okay.
So, well, gentlemen, we about ready to wrap this up, or can we talk some more on Motor Girl and Terry Moore?
I think we said pretty much everything that's relevant, I think.
Okay.
I can talk all night, but... Also, Ronnie and I have another engagement in an hour, so...
Hey, there you go. You might need to break. So, you know, if this is ending too early, just send all your complaints to ronbar316.
Yeah, ronbar316 at Twitter. Yeah.
It'll take the complaints. Jay will...
I'll feel those fine, so...
Jay will take all the compliments that Jay forgets.
Yeah, at Jay forgets.
And I'll just ignore you at UTENGR because I'm never on Twitter hardly, except when I remember about once a week. It's like, I need to go check out Twitter.
Yeah, so I don't ever see you out there. So. Or no, you can Twitter the...
because I'm just one... I haven't been able to figure out Twitter. I guess I'm technology and illiterate when it comes to Twitter.
Well, Twitter's about the only thing I'm on anymore. I'm pretty much off of Facebook. I rarely go out there anymore.
I guess I need like TweetDeck or something like that because I go to the Twitter page and I'm just kind of like, man.
TweetDeck is good. Yeah.
That's what I use too. Yeah.
Do you have TweetDeck on your phone?
Not on my phone, but like while I'm at work.
Oh, yeah. So you get to do social media at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think TweetDeck won't work on the phone. There's no, but it.
Yeah, I don't think there's even an app for it.
No, there's not.
Or an approved app, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
So there you go. All right. And I think we do have an email that you monitor, Jay.
No, I've quit using the email because we never were getting anything anyway, so.
Right. So it's all Twitter.
Yeah.
And you might get two out of three of us.
Well, the Twitter for the show is at BOTRComics. And I look at that every day. It's on my tweet deck, so if you send anything there, I will see it.
And you kind of get depressed because nobody's tweeting?
No, I get a few tweets, but nothing specific to the show much, no. So.
We need more tweets, is what you're saying.
Yes. Give us tweets.
Give us your all your tweets are ours.
Well, thank you, Ronnie, for jumping on with us. I knew this was a
thank
book.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, I knew this was a book that meant a lot to you. You and I have talked about it a lot over the last few weeks, especially as it's gotten more emotionally intense. That's like, holy crap.
Right.
And you and well, but both you and I both are like, does this have to end at 10 issues? But
yeah.
It's not a story that could keep going on. I mean, it really isn't.
And then once a day you play a cruel joke on me.
Yeah, I in Discord earlier today, I said, hey, Ronnie, did you hear that Terry Moore's going to do a Volume 2 of Motor Girl? I was like, nah, just kidding. So
he may revisit it.
He might. Who knows?
He threatened to revisit Rachel Rising, so he may threaten to revisit Motor Girl.
Hey, those wouldn't be threats. Those would be welcome.
Right. I have no doubt he could come up with a compelling story for Sam continuing on. So we will see.
All right. Okay. Well, I guess we're going to sign off, and we'll call it a night.